Good morning. First case on our docket is concerning the application for water rights for Cherokee Metropolitan District, and the appellant may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning, I'm Roger Williams. I'm here representing appellant Cherokee Metropolitan District, which I will refer to as Cherokee. We're here today to reverse the order of the Water Division 2 decision in consolidated case numbers 05-CW6 and CW20, which abandoned Cherokee wells 14 through 17 on a motion to dismiss. That motion to dismiss was filed by the Upper Black Squirrel Creek Designated Groundwater Management District, which I'll call UBS, and by the Bookers. The Water Court abandoned Cherokee's wells because Cherokee breached its contractual agreement to file what is called an application seeking to perfect conditional groundwater rights within the time agreed to by the parties under a stipulated decree. The order should be vacated for several reasons that I will cover today. First, the subject provision of the stipulated decree does not provide abandonment as a remedy. Second, abandonment doesn't fit within the framework of the stipulated decree or under Colorado water law. And third, because abandonment as a remedy is unduly harsh and over proportionate to any injury claimed by UBS from Cherokee's breach. We're going to request that the water court's order be reversed, the case be remanded to the water court, and the applications for wells 14 through 17 be reinstated. At this time, I'd like to indicate my intent to reserve time for rebuttal, 5 to 10 minutes. Let me provide some background to understand the issues and to understand the impact of the water court's decision on Cherokee. Cherokee filed its applications to make absolute conditional water rights in 05-CW6 in February 2005. Cherokee had applied well 14 to beneficial use in 2000 and wells 15 and 16 to beneficial use in 2002. Cherokee filed its application for 6-year finding of reasonable diligence also in February 2005, consistent with paragraph 15 of Cherokee's last diligence decree in 98-CW80. The Upper Black Squirrel District did not timely file statements of opposition, but instead was granted intervention and then filed its statements of opposition in both the 05-CW6 and the CW20 cases. The UBS filings do not reference abandonment, notwithstanding that it is an affirmative defense to water court's applications and is waived unless raised in the first responsive pleading. Cherokee filed its amended application in 05-CW6 on April 30, 2008, adding Cherokee well number 17 for partial absolute status. Cherokee had applied well 17 to beneficial use by April 28, 2006. UBS and Bookers, appellees here, moved to dismiss in January 2009 based on paragraph 10F of the stipulated decree in case number 98-CW80, which provides Cherokee shall timely file a water court application seeking to perfect the conditional water rights of its wells that have been applied to their decreed and permitted beneficial uses. Second sentence, Cherokee shall file said water court application on or before 2 years after the first diversion from the wells and will make best efforts towards final adjudication of the water court application within 1 year after filing. Third sentence, in any event, any conditional groundwater rights that have been applied to their decreed and permitted beneficial use shall be subject to regulation of the state of Colorado and the district, that's the UBS district, 1 year after the first diversion from the well, consistent with the decree in case number 53483, District Court, Pueblo County, Colorado. A couple of observations about this provision. First, paragraph 10F, which I'll sometimes call the perfection provision, does not specify abandonment as a remedy. Also, on its face, paragraph 10F does not require any actions for conditional water rights that are not being, quote, perfected.
That's a nice study there, though. I mean, do you concede, though, that you filed after the 2-year period?
for wells 14, 15, and 16, clearly beyond the two-year period. For well 17, we filed on April 30, whereas the first diversion for beneficial use was 2 years earlier on April 28. Our position is that abandonment doesn't apply, and if it does apply, then the full complement of abandonment procedures also apply. And so by filing by the end of the month, April 30th, we are timely with that application.
Thank you.
Could I follow up with one question there, too? The paragraph you were reading in the agreement, in the stipulation, in the order, requires you to file an application to perfect within 2 years. Do you understand that to mean then also that you have to have actually perfected your right to an absolute decree by that point in time?
I believe that we are required to file absolute for those amounts that have been applied to beneficial use.
But does that mean you have to have applied all the water for which you have a conditional decree to a beneficial use and be ready to make it absolute?
I do not read it that way.
Okay.
We've had this stipulation agreement before us, haven't we? In the prior Cherokee case, I mean, this is the stipulation release that settled previous litigation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting document. And then this is all negotiated. Apparently, it looks like modifications of the statutes. And, of course, this is a hybrid anyway, since this is designated groundwater, but due to the fact that the case was initiated, in effect under the grandfathering provision of the 69 Act, it's in water court. So it's pretty interesting. Do you know anything about the reason that the 6 years that would otherwise be applicable in water court for diligence was modified in this stipulation and released to 2 years?
Well, let me first say that I do not know why the parties agreed to a modified two-year filing. Let me clarify that we don't consider this to be a application to continue diligence, and it does not appear to be, or it's at least not termed to be, an application to make absolute.
Let me explain why I'm asking this question. There appears to be a forfeiture provision in the statutes, both in the designated groundwater statute and in the 69 Act, and that has to do with filing for diligence. Actually, when the groundwater commission is involved and the state engineer doing the permitting, as you know, you have to drill the well within a certain time, and then you have to put the water to beneficial use in a certain time, and those are like 2-3 year periods in there, or else it's canceled. Similarly, if you don't file for diligence within 6 years, when you're in a normal water rights situation, it's canceled. It's forfeited. I mean, it's abandonment by force of law. So, yeah, I guess my question is, I mean, maybe we're just stuck with the actual language in any event of this stipulation release, which was included in the decree, but it certainly looks like there was a bargain for a two-year period to develop the water from these wells and to file. And if you didn't file on time, that was it. It was a cancellation. It was a forfeiture. So what's your reaction to that? One, the plain meaning of the stipulation, and two, how could it be anything other than a reflection but a modification of the cancellation provisions of the statute, which do in fact work a forfeiture for failure to file?
First, addressing the plain meaning of the agreement, we believe that raises doubt that prevents the grant of a motion to dismiss. At paragraph 10F, we have no reference, which I've called the perfection provision. There is no reference to abandonment as a remedy. If one refers to 10B, that imposes abandonment as a remedy if the party fails to apply, or if the party doesn't apply water to beneficial use. So by providing, by including abandonment as a remedy under 10B, but excluding it under 10F, the parties have indicated their intent, but it doesn't apply in 10F. I think this is consistent with construction, statutory construction, where this court has determined if if parties or if the legislature includes a provision in one section of a statute, but it excludes it from another section of the statute, that exclusion is intentional, and the parties did not intend, or the parties intended to exclude the provision from that part of the statute where it is excluded. Here, 10B includes abandonment, 10F excludes abandonment. As a consequence, we believe that proper construction requires that abandonment does not apply in 10F.
So what's the specified remedy then, taking your construction, for failure to timely file?
Well, as I look at it, the purpose of paragraph 10F was to provide the UBS and the state with regulatory authority over the water rights that had been perfected, so to speak. And so the remedy is to allow them that regulatory authority.
They otherwise have that regulatory authority? I mean, I'm not understand why that is giving it any meaning at all.
Well, to the extent that that's not the remedy, then...
You agree that they would otherwise have that authority, and therefore that doesn't give it any import?
Well, I agree that they would otherwise have that authority, but it's interesting in this case that although they had that authority, they were supposed to take regulatory authority 1 year after the wells were perfected, and Cherokee was to file its application 2 years. They did nothing to effectuate their remedy. They did not enforce it. They didn't send, the record doesn't show anyways, any attempt to enforce by a notice and demand.
And how does that relate to the meaning of paragraph F?
We may not have any meaning.
The central problem, I think, is that I appreciate your argument that this is too harsh, that it's not specified. You've talked about abandonment excluded. I don't think that's what you mean. I think you mean that the specific provision regarding abandonment is excluded. The issue, of course, is whether that prevents that as a remedy in some way. So I appreciate those arguments, but what you're not really doing for me that would be very helpful is, what meaning are you giving this? I mean, after all, it has mandatory language in it. And so what is the meaning of this provision? If I accept all the rest of your arguments, how do I give it the shall timely file? It doesn't say it would be nice if they timely filed. It's mandatory language. How do we give it meaning?
You know, that's difficult to say because the meaning is unclear and we don't have any discovery on this issue. Without discovery, it's a difficult question to answer. What I believe it gives them as a remedy is whatever it is they were deprived of by the Cherokee District's failure to adhere to the procedural requisites that were established by the stipulated decree. For example, it may be that the well records, the diversion records for Cherokee would show some mistaken use, some use that's not either recognized under their decree or under their permit. If that's so, then there may be a remedy for UBS under that context. That's just an example. What the point that I think I see being made, both under paragraph 10F in terms of the transition of regulation and by the arguments that I see from the UBS, are that they bargained for strict procedures. Those procedures were not complied with. Then the question becomes, okay, what is the consequence of the failure to adhere with those procedures?
In trying to answer that question, it's just perhaps too easy in your view, but easy to sort of go to, if the provision is you shall timely file, it seems to imply that if you may not file untimely, and therefore a filing beyond 2 years is not permitted. That doesn't directly address abandonment, but obviously it has those consequences.
I think this dovetails with Justice Hobbs' question about the provision being a reflection of the statutes. And I mean, our thoughts on that are that the parties actually intentionally, I can't argue intent on a motion to dismiss, but the parties did not use statutory language consistent with abandonment in paragraph 10F. For example, a party may abandon a water right if it fails to timely file an application to make water rights absolute. We don't have that here. We have an application to perfect. So they didn't use that language. The statutes also require that you may lose a conditional water right if you don't timely file within the 6-year period. But on its face, paragraph 10F doesn't apply to conditional rights. The statutes, the Colorado Water Statutes, refer in certain sections to the possibility that a water right may be canceled or it may be relinquished. If the parties intended to adopt abandonment as a remedy, I think they should have adopted statutory language that is consistent with and that has some nexus to abandonment. Paragraph 10F does not include language that is consistent with an abandonment, a cancellation. It's not there.
Oh, well, it looks like these kinds of jurisdictional filing deadlines we see all the time, you know, in the governmental immunity cases and the APA cases and the Rule 106 cases, where there is a jurisdictional filing requirement, and if you even miss it by one day, our cases are very strict. So it looks to me like, even if you don't call it abandonment, the trial court is right for the reason, the water court is for the reason that it, under the stipulation agreement of the parties, it cannot act on the application. It wasn't filed timely. You enforce the contract the parties made that was included in the decree. The water court is left with no choice but to dismiss that application. The parties tailored this. They modified the statute. You'd have to agree with that. This is not the 6-year period, even though you argue the intent of that and you argue abandonment. This is plainly not the 6-year period.
It's plainly not the 6-year period, but it plainly does not incorporate statutory language consistent with the remedy of abandonment.
That's because the parties tailored this for some reason where they sat across the table and negotiated the context of when this filing had to be made. So why is there any room here for us or the water court to entertain an application that wasn't filed as it should have been under this agreement? I mean, your client agreed to this. They sat there at the table and wrote it with the help of counsel, apparently.
In this court's Cherokee v. Simpson decision, the court said that if the parties intended a particular result, quote, they could have said so, end quote. The lack of a provision of abandonment as a remedy raises doubt about the party's use or intention to use that as a remedy, and the failure to adopt statutory language consistent with that remedy heightens the doubt. Now, we believe is dispositive of the issue of abandonment as a remedy for paragraph 10F.
Well, how about the idea of whether or not there's jurisdiction or ability to entertain the application, given the plain language of this paragraph?
The, you know, whether that is the impact, I think that's something that we have to learn through discovery. I mean, we don't see that on the face of the
shall file.
We see shall file, but we don't see the remedy that the court loses jurisdiction. We don't see abandonment.
I ask you one other question just about the interpretation of the language. While answering those questions, you made very express that you do not understand the language seeking to perfect the conditional groundwater rights to mean to make those groundwater rights absolute. What do you think was meant by perfect the groundwater, the conditional groundwater rights?
Well, my initial reaction to the language, paragraph 10, was that whatever is made from the time of diversion, January 1, and the next 2 years, whatever is applied to beneficial use over those 2 years, that is the extent to which we will be able to divert water from that well. And whatever remained not perfected could not be developed. That knee-jerk reaction is, you know, it's not stated, and so, you know, I can't say that that's what it means, but that was my initial impression. And
one follow-up there, you said could not be perfected. Do you mean by that something different from abandoned then?
The party, the Cherokee, would not have the right to further develop the water associated with that specific well. So if January 1, they diverted 2 CFS, and that's all they diverted by January of 2002, then 2 CFS was the cap, and no more could be diverted from that well. That was my initial read of the language. I'd like to talk briefly about the issue that abandonment is an over proportionate remedy to any injury claimed by the Upper Black Squirrel District. As indicated in our briefs, Colorado favors contract interpretation that leads to fair and reasonable result and not a harsh or unreasonable result. UBS complains in its answer brief of some nondescript procedural injury that can't be remedied by damages. For example, at page 28, they say any remedy other than abandonment would allow Cherokee the benefits of the 98 CW 80 decree and deprive UBS of the protections afforded by the decree's limitations. UBS never explains how the alleged material breach by Cherokee affects it, and the parties haven't had any discovery into that issue. UBS never identifies the specific protections that it lost, how the loss of the protections impacts UBS, whether financially, practically, or from a basin management standpoint, and whether the impacts are steady or chronic, and any actions that they've taken to correct the impact and correct the breach. It's clear from the record that UBS knew of its irreparable injury in 2002 when Cherokee neglected to file its first application to perfect, but the record shows no action by UBS to stop or mitigate its injury. Second, looking at paragraph 10F of the stipulated, looking at the entire paragraph 10 of the stipulated decree, it's clear that UBS has reaped huge benefits from the stipulated decree, irrespective of Cherokee's breach of paragraph 10F. I'd like to reserve any remaining time I have.
You have approximately 6 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Peter Nichols. With me here today is Lisa Thompson for the Upper Black Squirrel Creek Designated Groundwater Management District and Tim Beaton for the Bookers. Many of you know my partner, Bob Trout. He would be here today if he could be here today. He's in the hospital recovering from surgery, but the good news is they did not find any additional brain cancer. If it pleases the court, as Justice Hobbs recognizes, this is not a new dispute. This is the third time it's been up here, the second time this year, the first time we did earlier this year on a procedural motion. Each time, Cherokee has sought relief from some limit that they freely negotiated for in this stipulated agreement. This is really a simple case. It's a question of law. It's an interpretation of the provisions of the contract. Provisions of all the provisions of the contract and the stipulated agreement. Cherokee failed to file to make any of the four wells absolute as required by the decree within the time period. The court declared those water rights abandoned for the reasons that have been mentioned earlier. This was a jurisdictional statute of limitations. The court has so held repeatedly in cases like Dallas Creek, Purgatoire, Northern Water Conservancy District, Lee Getty. They did not have jurisdiction. They could not have continued to make this water right live. Cherokee is trying to shift the responsibility for their failure to file to anyone they can think of. You just heard counsel for Cherokee say that the district would have been responsible for not notifying them in 2002 that they needed to file their application to make this water right absolute. They're also blaming the water clerk for not sending them statutory notice of potential abandonment.
Mr. Nichols, the double RL case, there is a little paragraph in there that says that when you deal with abandonment, notice in the decree is insufficient. You have to, the responsibility, I think it's under section 305 subsection 7, is to notify notification by the court of the potential abandonment. So I assume your position is basically that's overruled by the stipulation. Is that right?
That's correct, Justice Bender. They negotiated that away.
Well, how specifically? Just by using the words untimely file? Or timely file?
Three different places in the stipulation. I think it's important to look at the decree in paragraph 15. Paragraph 15 is the final paragraph of the diligence decree. It's the normal paragraph that you find in virtually every diligence decree, which sets forth the requirements for the applicant to file for diligence in the future with regard to the statutory procedure. Proviso at the beginning of paragraph 15, added by the water judge, says, except as governed by paragraph 10F. That takes it out of that statutory procedure, Justice Bender, and pushes it back into paragraph 10F. When they fail to file timely to make those water rights absolute within 2 years of having diverted from each of those wells, their water rights were abandoned, in effect, by operation of law. It's the plain and ordinary meaning of 10F and 15. It's in accord with Colorado water law. And in fact, it's the way Cherokee read this up until a couple of years ago in their first amended application in case 06CW5. They said that they would abandon any amounts not requested to be made absolute in that case. They've since changed their position. They're making a big deal about the fact that there's no remedy specified in paragraph 10F of abandonment. There's no need to have a remedy in paragraph 10F for abandonment because that's the way Colorado law works. In addition, in paragraph B, 10B, it says that any water rights not made absolute will be abandoned. So I've repeated that.
Oh, 10B?
10B, that's what it says. To have repeated that in 10F would have merely been redundant and added confusion.
Assuming that's right, take it that you're right about the remedy and that abandonment is contemplated there as the remedy. Can that stipulation be read fairly, do you think, to merely shorten the time periods that would be allowed by the statute, but not to do away with the other statutory procedures that would be required for an abandonment? That is notice.
I don't believe it can, because I think they bargained for this specific provision, they bargained for a shorter time period, and there's other statutory provisions. There was no way for anyone to comply with them. They're the only ones that knew when they drilled the well and when they diverted the water. The water clerk had no notice of that, no information. There's no way the water clerk could have given them notice. So trying to shift responsibility on the water clerk to do something the water clerk was entirely incapable of doing. When Cherokee agreed to this stipulated decree, they had to have known that they would not get any sort of notice from the clerk, because it would be impossible for the clerk to provide it.
Anything that would help us with why the parties agreed to a two-year period instead of a six-year period or some other period?
Yes. You know, it's important, I think, to think about the fact that these water rights were filed in 1965. They were adjudicated in 1972. The designated groundwater basin was created in 1969. The district wasn't created until 1979. The basin was declared over-appropriated sometime in the mid-90s. One of the things, you know, these water rights represented several thousand acre feet. In exchange for the right to export 10,000 acre feet from the basin, Cherokee agreed to various limits, including these procedural limits. The procedural limits are important to the district and to other water rights owners, both conditional and absolute, within the basin, because the water rights were sort of hanging over the basin, unprotected, and one of the reasons the district wanted to get these off the books is so that everybody would have more certainty as to actually how much water was appropriated, how much water was left in the basin, how much water was owed in the basin, both so that the district could fulfill its responsibilities under the statute to manage the basin for the benefit of all appropriators, and so that the other appropriators would know where they stood in the priority line.
Mr. Nichols, I wanted to ask you to respond to the argument that the distinction between paragraph F and paragraph B, in terms of B having the specification of abandonment or shall abandon. And I think, although you didn't cite that argument, I think you responded to that sort of indirectly, as I understand it, by your earlier statement that when you read B in conjunction with F, it would be repetitious to put an abandonment again in F, and that they should be read together. The difficulty that I have with that argument is that paragraph B talks about abandoning amounts not put to beneficial use, and then specifically says the method of that abandonment, essentially, which is by amending permits and water court decrees. So that's the import of that provision. I guess I'd like you to comment on that if I'm misunderstanding that. But what you seem to be taking to F is not abandonment by amending decrees, but you seem to be taking to F you may not file untimely, and therefore the consequence is abandonment. So I'm seeing a distinction and still having a little difficulty reading, understanding how to consider B as not implying that F specifically did not intend to include something regarding abandon, perhaps the same provision in B, or perhaps the greater provision that's being argued here. Can you comment, please?
The provision in 4B, it's a good question, Your Honor. The provision in 4B talks about amending permits, but also about amending decrees. You know, in their application in 05CW6, Cherokee said that they would abandon any amounts not requested to be made absolute. That would have the effect of entering the decree, of amending the decree for the water right, and the conditional portions would be abandoned. There's another reason for reading it this way. And the reason is the
You have to concede it's a slightly different concept of abandonment. I mean, it's not the statutory concept of abandonment. It rather requires them to amend decrees and abandon in that fashion rather than as a result of court action.
It does require them to voluntarily take that action, and that's what they propose to do in their application to make these water rights absolute. But the plain and ordinary meaning of reading paragraph 15 and paragraph 10F together, I think, also leads to the same conclusion that abandonment is the only remedy. You know, if the water right is not abandoned for missing the deadline, there's no effect to paragraph 10F. Why is it there? Paragraph 15 refers to paragraph F, takes it out of the statutory six-year procedure for diligence, and puts it under paragraph 10F. These water rights are all decreed for 4 CFS. Cherokee is attempting to perfect them for less than 50% of that amount for each one of those four wells. You know, if the water right is not abandoned, it's in entirety, if only the absolute claim were to be declared abandoned. And the remaining portion of the water right continued as conditional, that would rob 10F of any meeting, because Cherokee could simply use its existing diversion records to come back into water court and claim that the condition rights are now absolute. So there'd be no effect from paragraph 10F unless those water rights are abandoned. Cherokee makes a lot of, in addition to blaming everybody else, they make a lot of public policy arguments that really aren't applicable here in an issue that deals with a question of law and interpretation of a stipulated decree. So they make a big deal about forfeiture as a disfavored result. They bargained for this. You know, they need to be held to it. You know, if they made a bad bargain, that's really, you know, their problem. It's not something that has to be dealt with later. They argue against maximum utilization, an issue that they did not even bring up in the trial court. And in fact, maximum utilization really militates towards abandonment. Get these conditional water rights off the books so that everybody else has certainty and knows which water rights are capable of being administered and must be administered in priority in this basin. In exchange for the right to export more than 10,000 acre feet of water from this over-appropriated basin, a decree involving 10 wells, Cherokee agreed to a few things, largely procedural in nature. Procedural in the sense that it would help the district and the other appropriators know where they stood with regard to Cherokee now and in the future. You know, to read 10F out, as Cherokee would have you do, requires you to read the proviso, the first part of 15, out as well. That was something that was specifically added by the water court judge, and I think it makes it very clear to have the effect of 15. If you do not hold them to that deadline of 2 years, if you allow them 2 years and 2 minutes, or 2 years and 2 days, as they would have you do for well 17, aren't you inviting other people to come in and ask for relief for 2 years and 2 weeks, or 6 years and 2 days, or 6 years and 2 weeks? This is a jurisdictional statute of limitations. You've consistently applied it as a court in the Dallas Creek case, in the Predatory v. Witte case, in the Northern District the Getty case, among others. I think you may be opening Pandora's box if you don't hold to this deadline. As I said, you know, I think this is a pretty simple case for you. I don't really have a lot to say, but with the court's indulgence, I would consult with my counsel to see if I've forgotten anything.
I have one question, not about that issue.
Of course.
In the papers, I seem to have read that with respect to the attorney's fees, it appears at least that a timely request for hearing on the attorney's fees issue was made. Is that accurate? And then there wasn't a hearing on it. The judge just issued an order finding it frivolous.
Thank you, Roger, for my co-counsel would remind me to address. There was apparently a request for a hearing. The water judge did not hold a hearing. The statute does not require him to hold a hearing. The statute requires him to consider certain enumerated factors and make findings. He considered those enumerated factors and he made appropriate findings under all of those circumstances, and that's set forth in our brief. The hearing requirement that they refer to in the Pendolo case that they rely on is no longer good law. The statute has changed since that case was adopted.
Well, other case that nobody cited. The reason I know about it is I wrote it, and it's called Aldridge. It was a divorce case, and unless the statute was changed after that case, which I didn't check, we said all a unanimous opinion that if you request a hearing, the judge under that statute, you have to have it. So it's in 94 Pacific 2nd, 1370.
A third,
right, thank you.
I'll have to look at it.
I'm showing my age as well. But unless the statute was changed post that case, then I think that if the application was filed timely, at least unless we want to overrule that case, the hearing should have been granted.
Justice Bender, it's my understanding that the statute requiring hearing is not in effect anymore. Yeah, I'm not.
He's just taking a moment. So,
thank you very much. Nothing further. We would urge you to read the decree in its entirety, particularly paragraph 10F and the proviso at the beginning of paragraph 15. Interpret the decree as a question of law and declare that Cherokee's water rights for wells 14 to 17 are abandoned in their entirety. Thank you very much.
Your Honors, I'd just like to remind the court that any doubt on a motion to dismiss is resolved in favor of the Cherokee District. We're here talking about an abandonment of a water right by statute. And I think that Colorado law, in similar circumstances, does not allow that to occur ipso facto, even if that is what a contract provides. In the foreclosure context, the right to foreclosure is a matter of the loan documents executed between the borrower and the lender. Notwithstanding, the legislature has interposed safeguards to protect the property owner. Formerly, it was a right of redemption. Now, I believe the law requires a curative period to allow the borrower to cure and bring current. So in Colorado, water rights are property rights of constitutional magnitude. In this contract between Cherokee and the UBS, they state that there is a remedy of abandonment, but that can proceed without safeguards and without any procedural protections. That's inconsistent with Colorado statutes.
Unfortunately, our case is also replete with the fact that you can bargain away valuable rights. For example, subordinate the essential value of your water right to another water right. You can certainly bargain away procedures. It seems to me you can adopt statutory provisions or ignore them or modify them. I think that stipulations, as you well know, are basically the way we settle a vast majority of our cases in the water court is by stipulation. So how do we start here in this case, in effect, modifying agreements that modify the statutes and actually compromise otherwise valuable rights?
I think that the compromise of otherwise valuable rights can be accomplished when that compromise is express and knowing. Here, we don't have those two factors present in paragraph 10F, and paragraph 10F doesn't reference other statutory language that has a nexus to abandonment. And so we can have abandonment by contract, but it has to be express. And in my opinion, there should be procedural requisites that would go along with it, such as those that the court has, I mean, that the state has put into place with respect to foreclosures, and like those that the state has in place to prevent against abandonment of water rights in the statutory context. For example, there should be notice provided, and that's not here. So what UBS contends happened is, back in 2002, we lost our water right. And notwithstanding the fact that diversions were still made, we lost our water right, and we found out about that in 2005. But I think that the surrender, the forfeiture, the abandonment of a valuable property right requires notice and demand at the very least.
The difficulty I have with that argument seems to me to be that if we were to interpret the contract contrary to your, the stipulation contrary to your view, that is, that this provision calls for or prevents an untimely filing, the consequence of which is abandonment, then it seems to me that the implication of that is that that's what you contracted for, and so there's the notice. So I'm not sure. It seems to me that your notice argument is dependent upon our failure to accept the view of the contract against which you are advocating.
You know, as suggested in our opening brief, if abandonment applies, the entire complement of abandonment procedures should apply. And that includes 6 to 9 month notice in advance of the obligation to
file. To make that same argument, if the paragraph were explicit and said, may not timely file, and by failing to timely file has abandoned those rights, would you still argue that the abandonment process was necessary?
I'm sorry.
If this provision, the provision F, specifically provided that for the failure to timely file, the consequence is abandonment, would you still make the argument that a process had to be, the statutory process had to be engaged in order to determine abandonment?
Well, as I indicated earlier, an abandonment, forfeiture, waiver must be express and knowing. Under the circumstances that you're suggesting, we understand that, and we have an express remedy, an express forfeiture, an express abandonment that's set forth in the contract in front of us.
So therefore, your argument that the statutory process must be followed is again dependent upon your interpretation of paragraph F. That is, it's dependent upon an interpretation that says this paragraph does not clearly provide for the failure to file as abandonment consequences.
Well, if I've misspoken, I think what we've argued is that the paragraph 10F does not provide for abandonment as a remedy. If it does provide abandonment as a remedy, then we inject the water court statute, I mean the water statutory procedures for abandonment. Thank you, Your Honor.
On behalf of the court, I thank all counsel for your arguments. The case stands submitted.